what happens is we develop anxiety, then all of a sudden we have shackles around our ankles and we have our hands bound. And if this lasts long enough, we start to identify as someone who just is immobile, right? We just consider ourselves to be lacking the ability to move well, and that becomes who we are. We might even see ourselves as crippled in some way, right? We just physically can't move the way we would like to. But we don't realize that we actually can move perfectly well underneath it. And when you learn the tools and you do the practice to overcome anxiety, the feeling is like those shackles have been removed. And then you go through life and you're like, wow, I can't believe I used to feel that way before and now I don't.
Welcome to this anxiety masterclass. I'm really grateful to have you here. There are a lot of people who find themselves in difficult circumstances and they succumb to the pressure surrounding them and they don't take action to change things. So the fact that you're here willing to directly confront your anxiety, I think that says a lot about you. I really appreciate you spending time with us, and I know my colleague John appreciates it as well. John is one of my colleagues at High Existence. He's a practicing Stoic. He is also a jiu-jitsu aficionado, and probably most importantly, he's a father. These are all deep and important aspects of John, but today we're going to be focusing on his role as an anxiety educator. I was able to convince John to take us behind the curtain and share his perspective and wisdom on overcoming anxiety. Anxiety is such a common problem that people are faced with and is such a powerful entry point into a really rich conversation of things like emotional mastery. So, John, thank you so much for being here. I'm very excited to dive in.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Super looking forward to sharing any useful ideas and tips and practical methods that I have to help people overcome anxiety.
I'm very excited as well. So there's a bunch of questions that I want to cover with you in this masterclass. I want to talk about the traps that keep people stuck in anxious patterns. I want to talk about what's possible on the other side of anxiety. And if you're someone who struggles with social anxiety, as many people do, I want you to pay special attention because we're going to have some good material for you to overcome the barriers that keep you from having the social interactions that you would like. So let's dive in. My first question, just so we can get clear on terms, what is anxiety? When we're using this word, what experience are we even talking about? What does anxiety mean?
So anxiety is essentially a form of maladaptive fear. So fear typically is a rational response to immediate danger, whereas anxiety is the combination of fear plus uncertainty. And because we don't have the data that we need to accurately assess the potential danger, our brain kind of goes into overload and we start thinking that everything could potentially lead us to catastrophe. And so it leads us to freaking out about small things, freaking out about things that might happen in the future. And someone who has anxiety is essentially preoccupied with this idea that something dangerous or threatening is going to happen to them. And it's a very difficult state to be in. It's very resource intensive. It really draws a lot from us. We have kind of tunnel vision when we're in it. And you know, when I used to suffer with anxiety, I couldn't hear people who were talking to me when I was going through a kind of an anxious episode. And it's nature trying to help you. It's like nature's wiring that has existed for a long time that's trying to serve you and try to keep you alive. But it's kind of gone wrong. And so this once good thing has now become inefficient and is causing you to suffer unnecessarily.
So John, you're speaking from rich experience, not just the deep investigation and research that you've done to become an anxiety educator, but also your own personal healing journey and experiencing pretty severe anxiety. Could you share a bit about your personal experience when you were going through these bouts of anxiety? What was it like?
Well, I've experienced quite severe forms of anxiety, and it's covered the whole spectrum from social anxiety to panic attacks, hypochondria, fear of confrontation, hypervigilance. Like, the full spectrum of anxiety is something that I've experienced. And when you're in the middle of a truly anxious episode, it's like as if the world starts collapsing in on you. And the way that you think now, right, as you go about daily life, if you're not experiencing anxiety, is that you have maybe 5 to 10 things you could choose to think about, choose to do, right? You feel like you have these options available to you. When you're in the middle of an anxious episode, you will have one option available to you mentally. It's screaming at you and it's saying, escape this danger. And every part of your body is also screaming in at you. And it's very difficult to override this really intense feeling. And it doesn't matter if someone is talking to you. It doesn't matter if someone's giving you good advice. In the moment, you can't help but ignore it because your entire body is screaming, get out of this situation. Avoid. Flee to safety. And you can also be aware that you are thinking irrationally, but it doesn't matter because the will of the body, of your physiology, is so strong that it will just give you this deep unease. And the only way to get rid of that unease is to actually escape. So you could sit there in the moment and be saying to yourself, I don't think this is rational, but your body is screaming, get out of this situation, get to a safe, comfortable place. And then we'll take away this horrible feeling, which is anxiety. In terms of finding specific examples to illustrate how anxiety affected me, there are many things that I could choose from. One in particular, and this is something that really hurt me, right? And I was a film student in university, and I loved watching films. I would go to the cinema, I had a monthly pass, and I sometimes watched 4 films in a day, right? I was really into it, really loved it. And it got to a point with my anxiety where I would go to a cinema and I would feel like there was a serious threat, the potential of serious threat, like a danger in the cinema, right? Because it's dark, you don't really know who's there. And even though there was no evidence of anything being actually dangerous, if someone looked a little bit sketchy, if they were on their own, if they had a backpack on them, something like that, I would start to think about it and loop over what that could mean. And then my attention would go off the movie and start to look at them and what they're doing. And this feeling would build and build and build. And I knew that the only way I could actually relieve this emotion would be to leave. And there were certain times where I had to leave films, and I had to leave public transport, and I had to leave nightclubs, right, and social gatherings, because when you have anxiety, you'll pretty much do anything to get rid of that feeling because it's so uncomfortable. And that might be a more extreme example, but anxiety is quite general, right? So the patterns that lead to it are the same, whether it's social anxiety or whether that's anxiety about something dangerous happening. When I was going through my anxiety spell that came and went over many years, you know, sometimes mild, sometimes serious, social anxiety was also the thing that really hurt me, because we are social animals and we get a sense of self from the way that we interact with other people. So if in your social life you like who you are, you like the way that you express yourself, you like the way that other people treat you, but then you have this other private part of you where you feel anxious about certain things, that is definitely difficult, but you have the consolation that you have a good social life. When you have social anxiety, you feel like you a huge part of your identity is missing. You feel like you can't say the things that you care about. You feel like you can't make the jokes that you know other people will laugh at. I always had this big issue where if I was very close to someone and very comfortable with them, they would describe me as creative and funny and interesting. And then I'd go into a group and I would be the quiet one, you know, the kind of aloof one, the one that was more serious. And it was painful because there'd be this huge disconnect between who I knew I was and the type of person that other people thought I was because of the anxiety that was holding me back. And I would go into social situations telling myself, you know, like, I really want to connect with people. I really want to put myself out there. But it's like as if when you have anxiety, you have your armor ripped off you and you feel very vulnerable, like a raw nerve. And even the slightest hint at rejection or the slightest bad look from a person can start triggering that anxiety, and it kind of grips you in place and it becomes very difficult to express yourself. So yeah, social anxiety was not the only type of anxiety that I experienced, but I was extremely motivated to learn how to figure out how to overcome social anxiety because it was very painful when I was experiencing it.
I think a lot of people can relate to that experience, especially with social anxiety. I feel like it's so common, and it can be really just stifling because we feel like our authentic expression can't get through. And we have these relationships where people know us to be a certain way, but for whatever reason, there are these barriers and these blocks that keep us from fully expressing ourselves like that in less familiar contexts. And so to be able to do this work, to overcome this anxiety and feel that we can be our full self in these contexts is really a beautiful gift. And I'm curious, John, you've gone through this healing arc, you know, this journey for yourself of overcoming anxiety. For those people who are sitting in a difficult space of anxiety, where they experience it on a regular basis, maybe even experiencing it right now, can you shine some light on what is made available to them on the other side of anxiety? What kind of possibilities begin to open up for a person if they go on this healing journey? What kinds of things become possible for them?
The metaphor that comes up when I think about anxiety is that it's some kind of shackle, right? And it's hindering us. It's hindering our movement in life. So what happens is we develop anxiety, then all of a sudden we have shackles around our ankles and we have our hands bound. And if this lasts long enough, we start to identify as someone who just is immobile, right? We just consider ourselves to be lacking the ability to move well, and that becomes who we are. We might even see ourselves as crippled in some way, right? We just physically can't move the way we would like to. But we don't realize that we actually can move perfectly well underneath it. And when you learn the tools and you do the practice to overcome anxiety, the feeling is like those shackles have been removed. And it's a strange thing because it's the absence of something, right? Mm-hmm. So now let's use the example. Last night I was speaking in a podcast to Donald Robertson, who's a legendary Stoic writer, someone whose books that I have read. And, you know, I was really happy to have a video call with him and chat with him. And the sensation that I had with him was that there was like an emptiness in my body. There was nothing there. There was no nagging thoughts or thought loops or difficult emotions or butterflies in my stomach. It was just clear, like empty. And so I could actually speak to him and joke with him and have a good conversation with someone that I look up to. And this would have been unthinkable, you know, like years ago, where I would have probably wanted him to cancel the call so I didn't have to deal with that discomfort. Or I would have been desperate for the call to end when I'm in the middle of it, so I wouldn't have been present with him. And yeah, so the thing that is available when you overcome your anxiety is it sounds a bit kind of cliche, but it's a deep sense of emotional freedom, where all of these things that are weighing on you just get removed. And then you go through life and you're like, wow, I can't believe I used to feel that way before and now I don't. Wow. And people say to me all the time, you're very zen, you're very calm. I never see you getting worked up about stuff. And I tell them, oh, I used to suffer with anxiety. I used to have panic attacks, and I would have been in situations where I would have had to have like left situations in the middle of it because of my mind was overthinking, and they find it, you know, almost hard to believe. And now I'm the source of calmness and centeredness for them.
What I used to experience when I was younger was this chronic pressure to say the right things. And so it created this really stressful dynamic in conversation with other people, where they would say something and I felt like I'd have to quickly process what they were saying and then simulate what I was going to say back in my head to assess and judge whether or not it was a good thing to say and then say it. And this process, I had to do it quickly and seamlessly enough so that the other person didn't notice that I was doing it or something like that, which puts a lot of stress and strain, and it diminishes the authenticity of the interaction because I feel like I have to filter everything. Mm-hmm. So as I've grown, I feel that I've gotten much more faith in being unfiltered, you know, especially around the people who I've formed relationships with. You can kind of like relax into, there's mutual trust here, you know, and that kind of stuff. But to be stuck in that dynamic where you feel this pressure to say the right thing, it really diminishes your ability to connect with the other person because we're just grasping for validation. We're afraid that we'll say the wrong thing and then they won't like us or this or that. So to be able to get past that, I think is such a beautiful thing because it just opens up the possibility for more authentic relationships. And that's such an important part of being human, having these deep, trusting relationships. We've talked about these traps that keep people bound up in these self-reinforcing loops of anxiety. And if they aren't aware of these traps, it's very easy for them to sort of keep looping and stay stuck in these cycles, these patterns of anxious thought, anxious emotional experiences, all kinds of things like that. So I want to shine some light on them so mm-hmm. that people can begin to spot them, you know, when they're showing up in their own experience. So the first trap that I want to talk about is the personal failing trap. Can you share a bit about the personal failing trap, what that means?
So one of the ideas that I learned from the trauma researcher Bessel van der Kolk is that one of the main reasons people tend to end their life when they come back from the war, when they have PTSD, is not the pain of the trauma necessarily, but it's the feeling of isolation that the trauma gives them. It's the feeling of being separate and ashamed and nobody can relate to them. That's the truly painful thing that makes them just want to leave, right? Because if you're in pain, but you have an amazing support network and you feel like people understand you, that's a lot more bearable than you're in pain and nobody gets it and everyone's judging you and everyone thinks that there's something wrong with you. And so when we are struggling with anxiety, we need to be very careful not to say to ourselves that we are a personal failure, that there is something wrong with us. Anxiety is an amazing evolutionary device that has kept us alive and many other animals, millions of animals alive for millions, if not billions of years. It is the thing that tells us when there is potential danger. The problem is with the society that we're living in now, there are certain things that are going on that we were not evolved to deal with. So, as I mentioned earlier, anxiety is essentially fear plus uncertainty. And when we feel uncertain, we look for answers, we look for information to try and get rid of the uncertainty and try and ease the anxiety. But because we live in this information age, it's very difficult when we're feeling uncertain to get clear answers about anything. If you have a health issue and you go and Google it, watch what happens. Your anxiety doesn't go down. It actually goes up because you have thousands of articles telling you thousands of things that you could be suffering with. And so your uncertainty actually goes up and not down. And this is one of the problems of the information age. Then you have things like fake news, which is six times more shareable and spread six times more quickly than real news, right? So you have all of this stuff that's populating, which again, does fake news increase your sense of certainty or decrease it? So there are all these things in society that are constantly making you uncertain. News that is designed to trigger more fear in you also obviously doesn't help. And then on top of that, we are meant to live in small tribes, right? This is what human beings were evolved to do, live in tribes of, let's say, 150 people. And now we walk down the street and we're seeing 150 people within 3 minutes and we don't know any of them. Of course, that's going to be triggering certain patterns in us if we haven't learned to deal with them that could cause anxiety. And so we need to be careful not to tell ourselves that we have personally failed when we're struggling with anxiety, to realize that it's actually a very useful adaptation that human beings have. But because of certain experiences that we've had, certain lessons that we've taken from life and the environment that we live in, this anxiety for many of us is triggering in the wrong context and in the wrong amount.
How does the personal failing trap increase feelings of anxiety?
So let's go beyond just the inaccuracy of the personal failure myth and actually look at how that belief that we have personally failed if we struggle with anxiety is actually making our anxiety worse. So people with anxiety tend to avoid things, right? And when we avoid things, according to the exposure model of anxiety, we become more afraid of them, right? Because courage and bravery is something that we have to practice. And if we don't practice it in the face of certain things, then the skill atrophies and we become less courageous, right? So one of the important things when we work on our anxiety is that we have to at least turn towards it to some degree. Well, if we consider ourselves to be a personal failure, then how likely are we to share our anxiety with other people? Right? If we feel this sense of shame that there is something wrong with us, are we going to tell people in our support network that we're struggling with something? Or are we going to hide it and avoid those types of conversations? And by avoiding those types of conversations, you're not going to be developing a support network. So let's say you have social anxiety, but you're not telling anyone you have social anxiety. You're now hiding things. You're now not being authentic. You're now not practicing being vulnerable to other people. And so you again start to live this double life. There's this secret inner world where you're struggling and you have all of these quote unquote strange feelings that other people won't understand if you tell them. And then you have the false version of you in social situations. And that divide is very painful and it's not the recipe for a good life. And it's certainly not the recipe to overcome anxiety.
So the personal failing trap is just one of the traps that someone can get stuck in. There are two more traps that I want to discuss with you in this masterclass, John. The second one being the avoidance trap. Can you share a bit about the way that avoidance can cause more anxiety when someone believes that it's actually the path to dealing with their anxiety? Can you tell us a bit about the avoidance trap?
When you're in the middle of an anxious episode, you have this deep sensation that the only way to relieve those difficult and unpleasant sensations is to avoid the trigger, right? So in my own case, if I was struggling with a fear of confrontation and I was out at a bar and a fight broke out near me, my body would be screaming to me, just leave the bar, just get out, like just get out of this place. Doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter what you've done, it doesn't matter how much you spent on your drink. Doesn't matter who you're with, get out of this place now. And the body is screaming that and screaming that. And the mind looks for the door, looks for the exit, and you want to escape it. And when you do leave or get away from the trigger that is the source of your anxiety, it's not always as easy as just walking away from it. It depends on what the trigger is. But when you do get away from it and distance yourself from it, you can have an immediate relief from the anxiety, right? So we train ourselves over time that when we feel anxious, we avoid the thing and then we feel better. We have a fear of dogs. We cross the road, anxiety drops, we feel better. We have a fear of heights. We take the other route that avoids the height and then we feel better. So we're training ourselves, and it makes complete sense to avoid the thing that causes anxiety because it's painful and our body is essentially saying to us, this is dangerous. We want you to stay alive. We love you. So don't do that thing, move away, and you can live another day. However, anxiety that is a maladaptive, irrational-based anxiety is not serving us, right? So it can actually get in the way of us living the kind of life that we want. And so even though avoiding things can stop us feeling a certain emotion, it can also lead us to become an avoidant person. And so I've been like this. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, where you go through life and you feel like you just avoid certain things. Like you avoid certain routes, you avoid certain social situations, you avoid going out to certain places. You might see someone that you used to know when you're out shopping and you kind of glance at them and you think, I'll turn the other way, right? You just become this kind of avoidant person as a way to stay safe and to avoid those difficult feelings. But this is not the path to healing. How could it ever be, right? So if you have a fear of heights, how can just avoiding heights for the rest of your life ever help you get over the fear? It can't. And so on some level, whether that's through cognitive exposure methods or physical exposure methods, we have to turn towards the anxiety. And when we do this, the image is like, think of a candle with a flame on top. Our goal is to get rid of the fire. What many people with anxiety do is they try to stay away from the heat, right? So they try to avoid the flame. This certainly stops you from feeling the heat, but it doesn't get rid of the fire, right? The fire that is always present, always present, always present. So maybe we get this idea that we should throw water on it or we should throw sand on it, but we can't do that because we're too far away from it, right? Because we're avoiding it. And so the actual solution, according to the exposure model, is that we actually add more fuel to the fire. We make the fire burn brighter. And when we do this, the wick will burn down and the flame will cease to exist. And that's how we permanently get rid of our anxiety, is by actually turning toward it. And then the anxiety itself will burn itself out. It will sort out what's irrational and rational. And that is the way you make lasting changes. Now, there are lots of different ways to go about that, lots of different techniques and tools. But in a nutshell, that's the overall idea with the avoidance trap. You're never going to truly live the life you want if you're avoiding things all the time.
Yeah, so there's this idea. I'm not sure what the origin of the idea is, but you have this perspective of managing triggers. Oh, this is what triggers my anxiety. Now that I have this bundle of things, that's progress, right? Now I know what's triggering it, so I can just avoid those things and then remain untouched by these anxious feelings. But what I hear you saying is that those triggers don't remain static. They can actually grow over time because the avoidant behavior is actually confirming our irrational beliefs about those things, increasing the fear that we live inside of. Am I understanding you? Am I hearing you correctly?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a part of ourselves, our psyche, that is always watching ourselves, watching our behavior, watching how we interact with the world and making conclusions based on our behavior. And so if you constantly avoid certain things, on a deep level, a part of you will make the conclusion that there's a reason why you're avoiding it, and that the reason is that it's a terrible thing. So let's just say you have a fear of dogs. You avoid one dog, right? You feel a little bit better. You avoid 20 dogs. You feel it. You feel better. The same feeling every time. When you've avoided 100 dogs, 200 dogs, you've really cemented deep down, you've encoded this idea that dogs are to be avoided. They are a major danger. Maybe it started off because a dog barked at you, a very mild anxiety, right? So you just thought, oh, I don't like that. I'm going to walk away from them. But the more you repeat that behavior of avoiding, the more your brain thinks there's a reason for you to avoid that thing. And it essentially, a dog then becomes this symbol of danger, the symbol of terror. And your anxiety will be worse around dogs then because of that.
So, John, we've touched on the avoidance trap. We've touched on the personal failing trap. Now I'd like to talk about the elimination trap. And I think this is a really common disposition. And this is also, it's a very important thing to reframe. Can you share a bit about what the elimination trap is?
So the elimination trap, in my opinion, is the most important trap because this underlies our whole conception of anxiety and ourselves. So many of us feel that anxiety is something that we need to get rid of, right? And it makes sense because, you know, in modern medicine, if you have some kind of infection or some kind of physical ailment, the aim is to take a pill and get rid of it. So when we have anxiety, it's like, okay, how can I cut this out? How can I take a pill or give me some kind of quick fix that will just remove this bad thing? And over time, we learn to associate our anxiety as something undesirable, something unpleasant, essentially an evil, a part of ourselves that we hate, that we don't like, and we wish wasn't there. That's what we think when we have anxiety. The problem is with this elimination myth is that you forget to realize that anxiety exists for a reason. And the reason is a very important one. The reason is that it keeps you safe. So on some level, anxiety is one of the most important, beautiful emotions that human beings can experience. Anxiety is the thing that has helped you when you were a child growing up from getting hit by a car, you know, from jumping off something too tall. Anxiety on many occasions has literally saved your life. If you've ever seen a child growing up, anxiety would have been the thing that would have stopped you jumping into the pool when you couldn't swim. Anxiety is an amazing emotion. And when we have anxiety and it's a problem for us and it's stopping us from living a full life and it's making us feel stuck, the way that we overcome it is not by saying, I hate this part of me and I wish it didn't exist and I want to just cut it out and kind of like shoot it. The way that we overcome our anxiety is by actually listening to it, by actually getting a better relationship to it, seeing that it is actually a very useful emotion, but we're not interacting with it in the proper ways. We don't have a good relationship to that part of ourselves. And the image that I like to use is this image of a guard dog, right? So a guard dog that is a good guard dog sleeps through the night, and when there is a legitimate threat, starts barking, wakes you up, you know, you call the police and everything's great. A guard dog that hasn't been treated properly, perhaps by previous owners, is going to be barking at odd times throughout the night, is going to be waking you up, is going to be stressing you out. And one way you could treat the guard dog who isn't acting properly is by shouting at it, by telling it to go sleep outside, by punishing it, by saying, I wish you weren't here. And that's not going to improve the emotional life of the dog, right? So instead, what you do is you start caring more for the dog, listening to the dog, retraining the dog so that it does its job properly. So it's not about cutting out anxiety. It's about retraining anxiety and listening to it. And so when you feel anxiety, what's happening is there's a part of you that is screaming, danger, danger, danger. And if you try to push that down or not listen to it or have resentment towards that, it's not going to really get rid of it. In fact, it could actually make those emotions louder and more intense. But when you turn towards it and you start listening and you start showing compassion towards that part of you, that's when the voice of the anxiety may start to die down. And that's the beginning of developing a good relationship with that part of yourself.
So some people might be watching who have tried to overcome their anxiety in the past and have failed to see significant results and are still struggling with it. Maybe they even experience it more intensely than they have before. With everything that's going on in the world, you can see that, you know, sort of you have the post-pandemic anxious spikes, the dislocation that people felt from community, all these other contributing factors, the polarized media, all of this stuff that sort of piles on top of the triggering of this natural response that's occurring in the wrong context because we're actually safe in reality, but we feel deeply unsafe. Is this possible? Can you really overcome anxiety? Can you release the control, the grip that anxiety has on your life? This is something that is available to people. This isn't a pipe dream. This is something that you can really, truly accomplish if you have the right tools and techniques.
Yes. Yes. 100%. It's like, you know, when you ask me that, it's like you asking me, can you learn to do anything? Can you learn a new skill? Can you learn to play guitar? Can you learn some words in a different language? Yes, of course you can. Like, you absolutely can. And anxiety is essentially just something that you've learned. It's a process. It's a habit that you've picked up, and it's just getting in the way. So you have to relearn how to relate to the environment, to your own mind, to your thoughts. And you absolutely can. With the right tools, the right techniques, the right understanding, and understanding is very important. For example, one of the questions that I would ask you if you're struggling with anxiety is, can you go to a group of people and teach them exactly how anxiety works? Can you explain the mechanisms, the models that cause anxiety? And if the answer is no, then I would say, well, those things are important to learn. And that's why actually when I teach people to overcome their anxiety, I start by showing them how it actually works. What are the leading models? What are the different theories on it? Before we start getting into the techniques. Because if your goal is to relearn how to relate to your own mind, then it's important that you understand why the techniques work. It's all good and well me giving you a technique, but it's much better if I give you a technique and you know when you're doing it exactly how the technique is working.
So we've talked about the different traps that can keep someone from making progress in overcoming their anxiety. The personal failing trap, the avoidance trap, the elimination trap. And the real natural question that opens up now is, well, how do I navigate around these traps? What is the path to truly healing my anxiety, to integrating it, to relating to it differently so that it no longer controls me, and instead it works with me and it is functioning as a part of the broader set of tools that are that I am equipped with as a human being. So how do we navigate around these traps to a place where we feel like we have a handle on our anxiety and anxiety doesn't have a handle on us? And so that's what we're going to talk about in the next video. But before we wrap this one up, John, I wanted to give people an exercise they could do while they wait in between these videos. And a real common thing that people struggle with, particularly those who struggle with social anxiety, where they get mind blank, where they're unable to have an effortless and free-flowing conversation. And it just like impairs their ability to just engage with casual conversation, causing them to be a little bit more quiet and withheld than they would normally be or that they would like to be. They'd like to be a bit more expressed. Do you have an exercise or an activity that someone could do to work with overcoming mind blanks so that they can have these effortless, free-flowing conversations with people that they're meeting?
So mind blank is a beautiful demonstration of these three myths in action, right? So if you look at you're in a social situation, you start talking, then all of a sudden you run out of things to say, you feel stuck. You are now a personal failure, right? There's something wrong with you. You can't speak. The words are not coming to you, right? So you feel shame about that, which does what? Makes it harder for you to speak. Makes it harder for you to socialize, right? Because the personal failure myth is sustaining the anxiety, even intensifying it. On top of that, you have this avoidance, right? Because you are saying to yourself that you don't like the situation that you're in, you wish you weren't experiencing this, and so perhaps you decide to not speak, right? Like if you're experiencing mind blank, why try to keep talking when you're going to fail? So instead you withdraw, you start to avoid the trigger, and you become the quiet one all of a sudden. And then you have this relationship because of these two things in action that this is, again, like a terrible thing. You wish you didn't have mind blank. You wish you could change it. It's like a dreadful thing that you wish you didn't experience, okay? So there are these three myths that are there when you experience a mind blank. And so how can we use our knowledge of these three myths to reverse the mind blank when it happens? So the first thing that we can do is when we're experiencing it is tell the person that I have a mind blank right now. Okay, so we share it. We're not a personal failure. We lean into it. Hey, I have a mind blank right now. You just put it out there. That's it. Because even if you don't have a million interesting things to say, there's one thing you definitely can say, and that is, I'm having a mind blank, because that's the thing you're telling yourself anyway. So you just put it out there. When you do this, you also try to imbue it with an energy of playfulness and fun. Like, I don't know why this is happening. It's kind of strange. I don't have anything to say. My mind isn't coming up with words. And so you stop avoiding the situation. You stop feeling the shame. And instead of trying to get rid of the mind blank, instead you actually stop trying to eliminate it and actually tell people, I'm probably just going to be here for a while. I don't have anything to say. I'm just stuck here and that's okay. Do you mind? Is that okay? And you can find your own method of doing this. But what we're doing bit by bit is we're showing more compassion to ourselves. We're leaning into the situation. We're owning up to it. We're expressing it. And maybe you're only meant to have a mind blank for about 2 seconds, but when you have anxiety about the mind blank, that's when it goes from a 2 second mind blank to a 2 minute mind blank. When we can start relaxing into it and talking about it and expressing it and finding it kind of curious, oh, this is interesting, this thing is happening right now and I don't really know why, but I can't think of anything to say, then you'll actually start to relax and you'll find that you actually have a lot of things to say. So in summary, the next time that you experience a mind blank, make it a knee-jerk reaction to tell whoever you're talking to that you have a mind blank and try to find it amusing, try and find it light or playful. It's okay.
I love that. And it makes me think of how refreshing that could be when we remember that we're not alone in our anxiety and these experiences, and that most people have had a mind blank in their life. Some people have them quite frequently. So to be able to voice that and be honest about that can be so refreshing and can be an invitation to deeper intimacy with this person that you're talking to. So you could find that where in the past having a mind blank was an impediment to connection, when you have this reaction, it can actually strengthen a connection. It can bring you closer because you're honestly detailing your internal experience. And oddly, the paradox is you take the blank and you make that the conversation piece. So there's still motion that's happening. I feel like mind blanks happen more likely when we're trying to massage our expression into a certain form so that we'll be liked and seen in a certain way by someone. And then we're afraid that we're going to be seen negatively. So, and then we scramble, oh, what am I going to say? And then we seize up and we freeze up. But if we're just being honest and detailing our experience and still being playful with it, that can be a really powerful invitation for the other person. And the more that we do that, and it's now we learn, oh, it's okay to have a mind blank. That's no problem. This isn't some, social suicide. This isn't social annihilation. I'm not going to be laughed, out of this conversation. No one's going to point their fingers and bully me because I have a mind blank. It's completely okay. And just forming that relationship, to the experience of having a mind blank, I imagine is going to dramatically decrease the instances of a mind blank. So I love that share, John. Thank you very much.
When you listen to this tip, you might be thinking, well, I couldn't possibly do that. People would think that I'm strange or bizarre. People wouldn't like me, right? That's one of the things you're thinking about. But let's flip it back on you, right? Imagine if you and I are in a conversation. You tell me your entire life story, everything that you've been through. And my response is on the outside, oh, okay. Internally, I'm struggling to find something to say back, but I can't. But on the outside, I say, oh, okay. Versus you tell me your entire life story, and my response is, I did listen to everything you shared. I really did. For some reason right now, I can't think of anything to say back. It's really weird. There's this, I sometimes get this block and I can't express it, but I really did. I hope that's not offensive. I really did listen to everything you said, but it's really bizarre. I feel a bit blocked with finding the words to reply to you. Which of those responses leads to a nice interaction and a nice relationship, right? Because there are so many different tangents that you can go on with that kind of response. Like, oh, interesting. So what's going on right now? Are you trying to think of a question to say? And then you can go from there.
Yeah, it's obviously the second one. And it otherwise, if you're the person who just shared so much, you feel like you've been like, oh, maybe this person isn't interested. And whatever, anxiety, the social anxiety that they may experience gets activated. And then, the distance starts to form between people, where if you just be honest about it, yeah, it's so strange. And that invites them into connecting, more deeply about their experiences. So I love that disposition. I love that reflex. So in the next video, we're going to be talking about the alternative path that you can take that avoids these traps, the elimination trap, the avoidance trap, the personal failing trap, so that you can actually treat this process of working with your anxiety as something that is incredibly important and significant and meaningful, and that you should feel proud that you are pursuing this path. This isn't something to feel shameful about. This is something you should congratulate yourself for having the willingness to confront this if you can overcome your anxiety, it can open up the world to you because you build the confidence and the recognition that, yeah, I can do this. There's so much out there for me to experience. And so very excited to share that in the next video. John, any parting words before we wrap this one up?
The fact that you have made it through this video is incredible. I think one of the most important things that any of us can have as the starting point for overcoming anxiety is the drive to overcome anxiety, is the persistence and the desire to learn. So thank you for following this video till the end, and I'm really excited to get into the next lesson with you.
We hope this made a difference for you. We're curious, which of the three traps, the avoidance trap, the personal failing trap, the elimination trap, which has been the most difficult for you to wrestle with? We'd love to hear from you in the comments below. Thank you for spending time with us today, and we can't wait to share more with you in the future. Would you say there's a one-size-fits-all technique that will work for everyone if they're trying to overcome their anxiety?
No. But I would say that there's a one-size-fits-all strategy, and that's the one that I teach. What that strategy looks like is the integration of ancient wisdom, so that means Stoicism and Buddhism in particular, with the modern findings in neuroscience, combined with my own experience tinkering away and experimenting over many years with different types of anxiety and overcoming them, into a system where I've distilled the most potent, effective interventions that cover the whole spectrum of anxiety tools.